Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we got it all this morning here on 96.5 The Fan. Controversy with the Royals, players calling out coaches. Oh, we'll get to that coming up in about 15 minutes here on 96.5 The Fan. It is Fesco and Dusty with you. Dusty is on vacation. Mac Morey is here as well, just back from his mom's gooey butter cake. Heard you had some of that last night. How was it? Yeah, I know.
Man,
you got to get that GBC,
now
brother.
I'm gonna text my mom,
Momo. GBC,
yeah, please.
Now by 10 o'clock, let's go. We leave at 10:01, Momo. Get the GBC here.
We got Smash Your Pass at 7:45. Oh, come on, that's enough time.
Let's go. That would be perfect. Get it in here by.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
By 7:45 today. Well, anyway, we got a lot of fun we're going to have today. Dayton Moore is going to join us at 8 o'clock, talk about his celebrity, charity, however you want to phrase it. A lot of celebrities will be there. Golf tournament coming up a week from tomorrow, right? Yeah, the 21st. Today's Thursday, right?
Today's Thursday.
Yeah, so a week from today. We will have the See You in the Major Leagues Top Golf tournament out at Top Golf, so you can participate in that. But I'm waiting till 7:15, Mac. I told you I would wait to 7:15. Or not 7:15.
6:15. No, I couldn't 6:15. Ask you to wait till 7:15. That wouldn't happen. It wouldn't be fair to you.
We'll wait to 7:15.
I know. You're excited about
this. Well, I am. I am excited about this.
A certain Royals pitcher had a lot to say last night.
A lot to say last night. And it reminds me of my 90-year-old grandmother right before she died. And I'll explain that coming up in about 15 minutes here on 96.5.
Like
you like that tease? It's a good tease.
That made it even better.
Can you do me a favor? Yeah. Remind me of that tease. When we
I'm writing it down now because I won't, so I'm going to write it down.
Yeah. Remind me of that, you know, because I won't remember that. I was thinking about it when I went and grabbed a cup of coffee real fast before the start of the show. I'm like, oh, this whole thing with the Royals reminds me of my 90-year-old grandmother, and so we'll talk about that, not because, you know, we had some phone calls last night, but because it just is what it is. And so all right, so we'll get to that coming up in about 15 minutes. I'm excited, and I know you're excited about this as well, because another schedule leak came out last night, and for those just waking up, I just saw this morning as well.
Yeah, me too. I saw it when I woke up.
Yeah, got up this morning, and this is one of the first things I saw, and I'm like, all right, here we go.
Let's talk about it.
And it's going to be the Chiefs and Bills Thanksgiving night in Buffalo at their new stadium.
That's awesome. I'm a little surprised it's Thanksgiving.
Really? Okay.
Because it's such a premier matchup. I mean, they did this last year with Chiefs Cowboys. Like, okay, you're using this Thanksgiving. Like, they really just wanted to kind of shoot it to the moon. Let's see what we can do. It's kind of what they're doing again. I get it. But yeah, this game would do numbers any Thursday, Sunday, Monday,
Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yes, it does not matter. It
doesn't matter.
People
whatever
are
day.
Watching this game.
Yeah, they are. And so what game is Thanksgiving Eve on? Is that going to be a Netflix game? Is that going to be a Peacock game? I'm sure it's going to be some sort of standalone game. I would imagine being on a Thursday night and being, you know, Netflix having all the Thursday night games, I would imagine it's probably on Netflix, but
NBC.
I could be. It's on NBC.
NBC. Okay. From Jordan Schultz. There.
Okay, so the big TV station, right?
Yeah.
Not a streamer, the real
not
TV
Peacock.
Station. So they're going for a number, is what the NFL is doing
with
this game. Yeah, they're going for a number in this game, and
there's
a good chance there is a great number in this game. If both teams live up to their end of the bargain, Mac, there's a real opportunity that this Thanksgiving night game in Buffalo. Oh my God, I'm already excited. I can't even contain the excitement of Thanksgiving night in Buffalo. Like, that is a badass football game. I may leave the family Thanksgiving in Jersey and drive the 6 hours to get up there for that game.
Yeah, you should consider that, actually. That would be awesome. That would be badass. Yeah, I'm okay with it. Like, the holiday games, I'm a little over, but Thanksgiving is a day that already is so dedicated and, like, predicated upon, like, football. So I'm okay with that. Christmas, miss me with that. But Thanksgiving, like, I'm already going to be watching football. It's a part of the holiday. It's a part of the tradition.
Sure.
We're all expected to sit on the couch and get in our turkey comas and fall asleep to the Cowboys losing to somebody, right?
Right, exactly.
That is part of the day. So, yeah, I'm excited that Friday night, that should be by, eat in the early afternoon. You take your little nap.
Thursday night.
Yeah, what did I say?
Friday night.
Oh, yeah, so Thursday night, yeah. Whatever. Thanksgiving night, you eat early afternoon, you get your little nap in, you wake up, you get your cocktail, and it's time to go.
Yeah, and it's a hell of a slate, too, for Thanksgiving Day. I mean, of course, on the surface, we're looking at, you know, teams we think are going to be good, but you got the Bears and Lions to start this thing off. That's the first game of the day. That is a great divisional game. I mean, there's nothing that screams Thanksgiving Day more than the Chicago Bears at the Detroit Lions. Like, that's turkey, baby. That's stuffing. That's turducken. Yes. Like, that's America right there.
That should be
The way it should be, right? That could be for first place in the division.
Yeah.
That division's going to be wild. That NFC North, man, that thing is going to be insanely awesome and a lot of fun. And I think it just got better based on something that was said yesterday that I'm actually looking forward to discussing later on in the show. Then you got the Eagles at Cowboys. That's a great divisional matchup, battle for last place. and then you finish that off with because the Giants will be undefeated at that time and running away with the division. So the Eagles and Cowboys will be playing for seventh place in the NFC. And then you got the Buffalo Bills and Kansas City Chiefs from Buffalo.
What a night.
What a nightcap is right, man. I mean, that is going to be outstanding. And maybe this is the first time in a while we go up to Buffalo in the regular season and get a win. Or do we not want to get a win just to keep the thing going and just take care of business in the playoffs again, right?
And you forgot as well they're calling it Thanksgiving Eve.
Yes.
It'll be on Netflix, Packers at Rams.
Packers at Rams the night before Thanksgiving. How do you feel about that one? Because of all the holiday games, Mac, I'll be honest with you, I don't like that one. Wednesday before Thanksgiving. That's a big going out night. That's a big, you know, doing your thing. Everybody's in town. You're hanging out with people you haven't seen. Back in the day, it was the Brooksider on Thanksgiving Eve, and it was the place to be in the early 2000s, the Boom Boom Room. Like, everybody was back in town. It was an S show down there. I mean, it was as good as it gets. Maloney used to run around with a tie on his head.
Yes.
You know, that type of stuff. Usually by the end of the night, no shirt. Things that were going on in the Boom Boom Room in the early 2000s at the Brooksider on the night before Thanksgiving. That's the kind of stuff that I think a lot of people like the night before Thanksgiving. No matter where you live, if you're coming back into town, you haven't seen people, you're going out maybe with your family, you're doing a dinner. You know, your dad's toasting your mom the night before Thanksgiving, telling her how great of an organizer she is. I mean, like, those are things that people do the night before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Blackout Wednesday.
Yeah, so if I'm looking at, yeah, exactly. And you wake up on Thanksgiving morning and you don't know what the hell happened last night, and you're looking around, and you're going, who are these people again? That's Aunt Sue, okay. And everybody's hungover on Thanksgiving, and then you eat and you feel better, and you go about your day. So, like, of all the holidays, I know people are, like, anti-Christmas or maybe anti-Thanksgiving for these games. I'm anti the night before Thanksgiving because I just know how big a party night it is, and it's cool. The game will be on. It'll be a background, I think, game for a lot of people. If it's not your team, it's a little bit better because you don't have to focus on it. You can still do all the, you know, all the reveling that you do on the night before Thanksgiving. But, you know, that's the one, and I'm not really that mad about it, but if I'm ranking which ones I don't like when it comes to the holiday games, yeah, it is the night before. It's also a big travel day for a lot of people, right?
Huge travel day.
People are bouncing all over the country and doing their thing, and so it's just,
by 7 p.m. or 8 p.m., not everyone, no, but a lot of people are driving, and they're going to leave early. Yeah. I know that's what we did as a family. We always drove, and we'd leave at 5 a.m., and we'd get to our destination in the early afternoon, settle in, and by that time, you've eaten dinner. And, hey, Packers is Rams on. We're not going to go Blackout Wednesday. We drove for 10 hours today. All right, let's turn this game on and end our night.
Yeah, end our night like that. Yeah, people will be driving. A lot of people will be flying, stuck in an airport. So at least you have something to watch at the airport bar.
While
you're doing that. And so, you know, it's fine. It is. I'm just saying, like,
If I had to choose,
and I don't, but if I had to choose, like, that's the one I look at. I go, oh, man, that's such a great party night, and everybody's doing their thing the night before Thanksgiving. So we got that just joining us. Bills and Chiefs at Buffalo Thanksgiving night, NBC, to close out what should be a very good Thanksgiving Day slate.
That'll probably be a top five regular season game.
Ratings-wise? Yeah, maybe. Look, I don't know how they do the ratings anymore, but every game is bigger than the last one, it seems like, right? Every event is the biggest of all time. The NBA ratings in May, top 10 sports programs. How many were NBA playoff games?
I hope half.
Well, you're wrong. All of them.
Yay! Woo!
What other sporting events are in May that would be other than the NHL, the Kentucky Derby?
Kentucky Derby. I'm surprised the Derby.
Maybe the Derby was in there, but I just saw something that said in early May that shows the NBA's top 10. I'm like, oh wow, that's good. I mean, people are watching. The playoffs were great last night. I mean, my God,
great game.
James Harden was phenomenal. Goes to overtime. And Cleveland now has two opportunities to win that thing. Really, one opportunity to win that thing. Because if you go to Game 7, I think Detroit wins that. So Cleveland's got to take care of business in Game 6. But the Knicks are sitting back going, oh, my God, if Cleveland wins this thing, we open at home on, what, Sunday? Is that when it would be? Not Sunday. Because Friday's Game 6. Sunday would be Game 7. So you're talking Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
Either way, you're opening at the Garden instead of on the road. That's a huge bonus for the Knicks and a huge bonus for the casual NBA fan and a huge bonus for the league.
And when was their last game? Sunday? Did they win the series
Sunday
or Monday?
Sunday, Mother's Day, yeah.
That was it. So, wow. So if they don't have to play till Wednesday, damn.
That's 10 days. That's 10 the Russ versus rest conversation.
We're gonna have that. Get ready. Get ready.
Everybody's
going to
have that conversation,
it's
right? The Russ versus rest. Speaking of dumb conversations, the Denver Broncos fan done lost their mind.
Oh, my God.
Every year in the NFL, we seemingly have a new kind of twist or topic or something that we've talked about that we've never talked about before, right? I can't remember what it was last year, but I know I have this conversation all the time where we're talking about things that we've never talked about. Since when does winning the division guarantee you a home opener? Game. I mean, the Broncos fans are absolutely losing their minds. They look like the biggest stooges out there, the biggest buffoons out there complaining about what's going on when it comes to, going on with the Chiefs having the opener here at Arrowhead. I'd rather be in Denver because I want to beat their ass on the road and start the season that way. But I mean, good Lord, this guy at Daily Broncos, I wholeheartedly believe the Chiefs are no longer a threat to the Broncos. I think the tides have completely turned. Bo Nix will have a better career at this point going forward than Mahomes. We are the champs last year, and that won't change. Bookmark this. The champs of the West? Whoop-de-doo.
Whoa, nice.
Wow, beat three other teams, two that were, not really good last year, and another one that has a wandering coach. Okay,
yes.
Woo! You're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. And so this reaction, Mac, I mean, it's sick. It's insane. The reaction of these Denver fans. They're down bad, bro. Like really down bad out there in Denver about this game. I never knew there was a rule that because you won the division, you get the home opener.
That's
Shut the F up, man.
Crazy.
Like I don't want to hear about other teams complaining about our schedule when we in the last two years have played three games in 12 days.
Yep.
Three games in 12 days.
Multiple times.
Then last year, people forget this, Arizona and Seattle for preseason, then Brazil to start the regular season.
Yep.
So I don't want to hear about
off
the schedule.
Back-to-back Super Bowl appearances.
Back-to-back-to-back
Super Bowl appearances. Yes.
Three straight Super Bowl appearances. Go to Seattle for a preseason game, then come home, then go to Arizona for a preseason game, then come home and then go to Brazil to start your regular season, right? I don't want to hear anybody bitching about the schedule out there in Denver. Denver, man, I'll be honest with you. It's like new rent fans out there, Like, that's what's happening. You mentioned the casuals yesterday.
Yes,
That's what's happening. Denver got good. The casuals showed up out of the mountains, and all of a sudden are bitching about the schedule. There's never been a rule that if you win the division, you host on Monday Night Football the next season. The only rule is the team who wins the Super Bowl has the first game.
That's it. That's the one guarantee. Everything else is up in the air. I'm so over this. It's ridiculous.
I can't believe it's gone this far.
It's insane. You win one average division. The Chargers, worst offensive line in football. Everyone's hurt. Raiders, one of the worst teams in all of football. Maybe the worst. They had the number one pick.
and then
the Chiefs lost the best player in the league for a quarter of the year. So, it's ridiculous.
Denver's out there,
down bad.
Yeah, I mean, really down bad.
I did bookmark it. Good. So I'm very,
okay.
I did what he said.
Down bad. Put down the weed out there in Denver and let your mind clear up a little bit and see what exactly is going on. But also, too, what a great way to start the season, a Super Bowl rematch. I love this.
You're in?
Okay. Oh, God, yes, I love it. It's the way you should start the season. It's on the schedule. You just had that game. Do you have an opportunity for a rematch? Let's do it, man. I think it's really fun. And you can bill it. Let's pick up where we left off.
Yeah.
And you can have that whole story arc. I like it. I think it's fun. You don't like it?
I don't. Yeah. I'm kind of.
Why?
I'm not in on this because I just think it would be a better game later in the season. And again,
it may not be, though.
Well, but
because this Vrabel stuff could get out of hand as the season goes along and they could lose that team fast.
That's fine. That's that may be true. But also, you don't know that this game's going to be great. Now, it wasn't great in the Super Bowl.
You're right.
So I don't
know. I didn't say it was going to be great. I like the allure of opening. Like, I wish the Chiefs would have opened against Super Bowl opponents from the prior year when they had that home game and the opportunity to do so. I think that kind of stuff is fun. It's fresh in everybody's mind, too. And you're right. That Super Bowl stunk.
It was
so
terrible.
Do we want to see that game again? Like, I don't know.
And you can get the Super Bowl rematch. Again, like, for ratings-wise, I just think this would be a game that you could stick in week 3 or 4 and get huge ratings. And instead, because the first game of the year is going to be watched.
It's going to be watched.
Doesn't matter who you stick out there. We're gonna be hungry for NFL. So again, a little weird on the strategy, but it looks like they are going for the moon on these big event games, which I will not let distract me or let allure me from the fact of the reality is that they are over inundating us with football.
They are.
And international games and holidays. And that's really what we need to talk about.
And we
not
will.
These 7, 8, 9 events that they're going to stick in front of us. Whoa, 55 million people. The NFL's never been better. No, those are events. We always will come to events.
Yep. Yep. And I think the average football fan, I say average, that's us, the normal football fan. I think there's a lot of people that are like, all right, man, really? You're making me jump through all of these hoops. It's becoming a bigger story by the day, and we'll address that as we move along. All right, coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, we got one player that ain't happy with the manager. We'll tell you who that is next.
Fesco and Dusty.
Terry Hardee's is closed.
Well, that's Doc.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5, The Fan.
All right, back at it on a gorgeous Thursday morning here, 96.5 The Fan. It is Fesco and Dusty with you. Dusty off, Mac in. And so, last night, the Royals lose yet again. I don't think they're back, Mac. I really don't. I don't think the Royals are a team right now that is worthy of having the conversation of them being back.
They're 4-5 since we asked that question on that poll Wednesday.
Yeah.
They're 4-5.
So 4-5 in the
again.
Last
we've
9.
Asked it twice in the last 2 weeks.
Well, never should have been asked. They're not back.
They're 4-5 since we asked.
You're not back. You're a game under 500, which makes you a game even more under 500 as you're trying to chase to get back to 500. And now,
White Sox just got back to 500.
Yeah, the White Sox now are a better team than the Kansas City Royals and a better organization at this point in time than the Kansas City Royals. You're 4-2.
They're a better team.
They're a better team. They're 4-2.
A better baseball team.
And they've got a ton of minor league prospects ready to come up to the system here in the next couple of weeks, I guarantee it. And they're only going to get better
and better. God.
I mean,
it's your little brother, man.
It is, but they're better than you right now. They're 4-2 against you this year. I mean, you made your living over the last 2 years of being above 500 in the playoffs, beating up on the Chicago White Sox, right? I think Carrington had that number and that stat about how the Royals were against the Chicago White Sox and then against the rest of baseball. I mean, they were a dominating team against the White Sox, and that's how they made their hay. And now,
Over the last 2 years, 22 out of 25 times they had beaten the White Sox in 24 and 25.
22 out of 25 times in what years?
24 and 25. They had beaten the White Sox last year, 11 wins against the White Sox. If you remember, they had 82 wins.
Yeah.
And that's over 10% of the Royals' wins came against the trash White Sox that they were last year, and they aren't this year. You're not getting those wins anymore.
No, you're not. Their third baseman, Vargas, is a legitimate player. Murakami's a legitimate player. I mean, Chase Mydroth has been absolutely outstanding in these two games for the Chicago White Sox. They've got the pitching out there right now that's matching your pitching, and now we've got controversy surrounding the Royals. Mm. And Seth Lugo last night is not happy about the way that the organization is handling the ABS system. Here's Seth Lugo after the game. I'll let you guys listen. You guys can determine what you think Seth Lugo is saying, and then we'll have the conversation after we hear Seth Lugo.
I think we need to, me personally, need to just be a little more conscious of, you know, if I execute a pitch, then be willing to waste a challenge, you know, instead of worrying about getting it wrong and losing one for the hitters. So I think that'd be beneficial.
Are you going to be more, do you want to challenge more yourself personally? I know you guys as pitchers have stayed away from that. It's the early part of the season.
I mean, you know, the top part of the zone, it's pretty hard to tell. You know, I knew in the first thing I got at least a couple of them right in my mind, and then I went back and looked and they were all right. So after that, I was challenging when I knew they were there. I did one, but, you know, Diaz got credit for it, but I was ready to go after that. So I think just getting better about, you know, how we're playing the game, you know, the different rules and how much of a difference that makes. I mean, you know, for years you get one off the plate and You know it's not there, but, you know, batter can't do nothing. So, you know, if they're going to get us, then we got to get them. So we just got to really, you know, be more strategic with how we use it and, you know, make sure that we know what we're doing out there.
Do you like that it's in the game?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's, I can think about just about every game I had, you know, good or bad. You know, I think the size of the strike zone was, you know, a contributing factor. So, you know, if we're going to be, you know, more fair and, you know, we're going to have the challenge system, and we got to use it the right way.
We got to use it the right way if we're going to have a challenge system right there. Those are the key words, I think, by Seth Lugo. Now, a little bit does sound a little bit like baseball man whining about strike zone. I'm not going to lie. A lot of that is baseball man complaining. Seth Lugo's
also,
ERA.
He hasn't been great in his last two starts.
Yeah. Last four starts, he has a 7.59 ERA. Ooh. He has not been good.
Worse than I thought. That is worse than I thought.
He has not been good, Mac. And so that's, you can see he's kind of down bad. He can't seemingly figure things out. And so it becomes now, let's blame the ABS, not the, I guess it is ABS and the way we're utilizing the ABS. Now, that is a conversation.
Yeah, team strategy, the way you execute.
Yeah, what are we doing here? What is the team strategy? Because it doesn't sound like Seth Lugo is on board with whatever the team strategy is using this challenge system. And it sounds like he's very frustrated with the challenge system. He mentioned at one time, be willing to waste a challenge early. He said, we did. Somebody named DS got credit for it or whatever, but he was the one that wanted the challenge. Who the hell cares who gets credit? I don't know why that matters at this point in time. But then he closes it out to say, we got to know what we're doing with this. And when he says something like that, it makes me immediately think, is there a plan? I'm sure there is a plan, but is it a plan maybe the catcher and the pitcher understand? Is it a plan that's been laid out clearly? Is it a plan that everybody agrees upon? It doesn't sound like Seth Lugo and the manager or management, I will say. Q's going to get a lot of blame for this. This is not a manager thing. I'll promise you that. It is a combined effort in all of this.
Yeah.
No, the whole everything. Like, Q's going to get blamed for everything. It's a combined effort for everything.
I mean, the lineup last night's a massive topic of conversation.
A massive topic against the lefty.
Weird lineups.
They stink against lefties,
Cags,
by the way.
Cags comes in to pinch hit.
Pinch
Jensen
hit.
Come,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, why don't you just...
Yeah, we're all over the place with that. But again, that Q is the guy who's going to get the blame.
Yes.
They sit around and the computer makes the lineup, okay? That's just the way it is. They all sit around in a meeting room. They talk about the night before what they're going to do with the lineup. This is not just Q penciling in names like it used to be back in the day, right? It's not. This is an organizational effort and an organizational fail, and really an organizational fail that the guy who's allegedly your leader in the rotation, your oldest guy, got 1,000 strikeouts last night. Hell of a career for Seth Lugo, who was picked like pick number 1,000 in the draft in 20, whatever it was, and now here he is with 1,000 strikeouts, had a hell of a career. And he's out there questioning what we're doing with the ABS challenges. And so here's the way that I'm looking at it. My grandmother died years and years ago, 20 years ago now, I think it was, right? 2006. She passed away. And she was in her 90s. And it was funny because she always had these clothes. And I've shared this story before, but it makes a lot of sense now. She always had these clothes in her closet that she never wore, and they still had the tags on them from Macy's or wherever the hell she bought all these clothes, Lord & Taylor, whatever the store was. And we always used to say to my grandmother, why aren't you wearing these clothes? You buy these clothes, you keep the tags on them, you leave them, I'm saving them for good. You're 90. Like, what are we saving it for?
Yeah.
I'm saving it for good. Grandma dies, closet gets open, same clothes, same tags, never worn. The good time, the saving it for good never arrived, right?
Exactly.
Never arrived. And so what I'm getting at is, why are we saving challenges allegedly for later in the game? Because there are certain pitches that if they are reversed and called a strike, that could change the whole dynamic of the inning. And that's what Seth Lugo's talking about there. Now, you got to be mentally tougher and not let that get to you and battle and find ways to get through
that.
It. But if we have a situation where they're telling, like, the pitchers aren't doing the challenging, it's the catcher, the dugout, and the batter that are doing most of the challenges for everybody in baseball right now. But if we're sitting around and Lugo wants to challenge a pitch that he's convicted in, and then he said he went back and looked at him and they were all the right in his mind, if you're going out there and you're not allowing your guys to have those challenges early in the game, by the time you get to the end of the game, you may not need those challenges because you're getting your, you know what, kicked in because you're losing a game.
Because it doesn't matter.
An early challenge could have prevented Lugo from having a 27-pitch inning to maybe a 14-pitch inning. I don't know what the difference could have been, but when I listen to him say that kind of stuff, I see him with the wheels spinning like, if I just challenged that, I would have been out of that inning, and maybe the damage isn't there. And so I think they need to do a better job of communicating. It doesn't sound like there's great communication going on between the coaching staff and that side and the pitchers, because Seth Lugo, after last night's game, seems still very, very, very perplexed, Mac, about what he's supposed to do and how this challenge system is working via the team. It sounds like he's very frustrated with the way that the team is approaching this challenge system.
No, 100%. There's got to be better communication there within the team on how this is going. And I mean, you mentioned all the different factors into what that could be. Does everyone agree? Does everyone know all of those sorts of things? First off, I don't really care to give a rip if anyone agrees. Like, managers and all the coaches are going to come together and decide the way that we're going to do this. We agree. I don't really care, Seth Lugo, if you're down bad about it, you're having a rough four starts, you're a little bit in your head because you're not hitting the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But yeah, it is frustrating if you're Seth Lugo to say, okay, but I had had double the amount of pitches in that inning, I think, because that this dramatically changed the way the rest of this inning was called.
Right.
The way this rest of the inning was umped. So, no, I can see both sides here, but I think you look at Royals fans, man, you read last night, you read this morning what we're getting, Bob, and this is just another run, and it's such a roller coaster. It's kind of crazy to see in real time how quick things change. Last week, we're getting texts about how we're back. I got Kathy in L.A.
Yep.
Hitting me up on the DMs. Mac, where are you?
She's the best. I love her. She's such a sweet lady.
Awesome. Thank you so much for listening, Kathy. You're awesome. I don't hear you now, though, Kathy. I haven't seen your are you back questions yet, but we've got a lot of people. Q still gets the blame. He approves it. Lugo never should have gotten paid. We should have rebuilt. It's like I said before the season, Lugo and Cole should have been traded. No surprise they're playing awful or hurt.
I mean, I said trade Cameron in the offseason. That's where I stood on that, and I got laughed out of the building. You've got to trade guys in order to improve your organization. And now, where the Royals are right now, Mac, I don't know what pieces they truly have in the minor leagues. I don't know where they are as an organization. They're an organization right now that I believe at this point in time is kind of stuck in purgatory. You're at the bottom of the American League Central. The Chicago White Sox have now passed you as a franchise. They are now a better franchise than you.
They're a better team.
2 years ago, the Chicago White Sox were a laughingstock. 2 years ago, they were a laughingstock. They're now 4-2 against you this year.
Yep, that's true.
They're now 4-2 against you this year.
I'd say they're a better team. Franchise is a bigger discussion that we would have to delve into.
Look at the minor league comparisons if you want at Baseball America. The White Sox are a top six team, I think, when it comes to the minor leaguers, maybe a little bit lower than that. The Royals are in the mid-20s.
But as Dusty's laid out before, I mean, we've got our minor leaguers up at the top.
At the big league level, right. Yeah. And so do the White Sox for the most part. They got a couple of more guys they're going to bring up. Yes. Teal would have been up here if he didn't get hurt in spring training, and there's a couple of more that are going to come up this year, and then they're going to have their arsenal of guys up here, and they're going to be ready to go. And their guys right now look better than the guys that the Royals are rolling out there, because I look at the Royals now, where are the reinforcements coming from? You know, this team is not hitting great against lefties at all. I mean, there's a huge disparity against hitting against lefties. You and I were talking about it in the break.
It's nuts.
And just the record-wise, like against lefties, the Royals, according to Gemini anyway, the Royals are 4-9 versus righties. They're 15-15.
That's now, insane.
You get more opportunities against righties, obviously, but to have a discrepancy like that is wild. They're hitting .221 against lefties, .254 against righties.
Wow. Well, and the lineup's different. It's just it's so crazy. You see, I mean, again, Salvador Perez 0-for-4 last night, I believe 5 left on base for Salvi.
Yep.
Carter Jensen comes in to pinch hit for Diaz, and 2-for-2 Carter Jensen was last night. Why don't you DH him instead of Perez? Give Perez that off night. Like, I don't get the strategy here. I don't understand it, man.
And I don't either. And that's why I've been saying this is not my style of baseball. I don't like this.
He should be in.
This is not my style of baseball. You play the best players. You play the hot hand. You don't. I mean, the analytics never take into account what's going on from a human side of things. They never take into account, hey, maybe this guy's hot right now. Let's just leave him in the lineup. There used to be an old adage in baseball that when a guy was hot, you left him alone and you just let him do his thing. You never took him out of the lineup. You didn't take him out of that spot in the lineup. That dude's hot right now. That dude's hitting the snot out of the ball. That dude's finding ways to get on bases. We're going to leave that guy there at number 5. We're not going to mess with this lineup. He's doing good things right now. The guy is struggling, you take him out of the lineup. Analytics doesn't account for that. Doesn't know if a guy's been hot. Doesn't know if a guy's seeing the ball well, because there's not a number that you can put on that. Sometimes players just get into a zone. Sometimes players are just feeling it. Talk to them sometime about that. Like an athlete, when you're in that zone, you're like, oh yeah, it's completely different. Everything is slowed down. The vision is bigger. You don't hear the crowd. You've slowed the game to a crawl.
A hot shooter in basketball.
Right. 100%. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Or, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an NFL kind of like, you know.
A little harder.
Yeah. Maybe running the ball versus, I don't know. Yeah. It's very, but you're right. The three-point shooter in basketball. If a guy is on and for his last three games, he's just hitting shot after shot after shot.
Man.
I don't care who the defense is. That guy's playing good right now. And the Royals don't understand that side of this. They really don't. It's all analytics. It's all numbers. It's all computers. And you get these lineups that nobody understands, and you get these lineups that confuse the fans. I mean, and we had fans calling into Vern's show last night, upset now that they're paying to watch the games.
Oh, yeah, got lots
is getting
of texts
people
about
ticked
that
off about
too.
That, too. And that's the other
lots
thing that you have to factor in now.
Yeah.
People have shelled out money to watch this product, and it hasn't been a good product all year long.
How much was the Royals TV? $100?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's $100.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say
that's
I'm
what
not
people
money's
fall
tied.
Back on.
It's
yeah.
$100.
I mean, yeah.
Absolutely, I'm not going to like.
It's a tank of gas.
Your boy's broke right now, so I'm not trying to say like I wish I had $100. Trust me, I wish I wouldn't spend. Like I'm not saying I wish I wouldn't. Of course, I always am going to spend it on Royals TV, but it's $100. Like it's
right.
still a good price. Like I
but
understand.
But it's different than what people are used to, right?
100%. I understand the frustration, and it is warranted. This team had better expectations. You've got maybe the best player in the AL right now, like currently playing baseball.
Yeah.
And you are under 500 in the season, under 500 in the last week. You're probably 500 in the last 2 weeks. You're an average at best baseball team with, imagine consistently being average with Patrick Mahomes. It'd be unacceptable.
It would be.
And I know it's a different sport and the position is more impactful in football, but that comparison is still there. I mean, he plays every day. He's one of the most important positions, if not the most important position on defense at the shortstop. He's the best 5-tool player in baseball. He's hitting the ball well. Last night wasn't his best night, but still, it is not coming to fruition.
He's not going to be a superstar every night. It's just, it's impossible to do.
Impossible to do. And it'd be nice, we talk about this with Mahomes as well and the Chiefs, if someone else could say, hey, don't worry, you don't got to throw for 300 today. Don't worry, you don't got to go 4-for-4 from the plate today.
Right.
I got you.
I got you.
I got you. Take a breath. Do your diving catch. Play your defense. Don't worry at the plate tonight. We're going to get our offense going. And that's seemingly, they've come up short, and it's so annoying now because it feels like from a month ago this team has improved, but not enough for it to really mean anything.
Right.
You're losing 6-5. You're losing 5-4.
The bats are starting to heat up and the pitching's gone down.
The pitching's gone down. And this is the way it works, right?
Yep.
This is why you have to start out better and not dig yourself this hole, because now what are they?
Six games under 500. I think I was doing the math. I think by Tuesday is the next time that we can talk about the Royals being back to 500.
They're 19-24, yeah.
So if that's five games under 500. And you're going to take on the Cardinals this weekend, who are a good baseball team.
Good.
And they're playing great ball right now. And they're buying into what they're doing.
Way to go,
and
Kramer.
So I think right now with the Cardinals series coming up, man, they've got to find a way to get this win tonight against the White Sox and turn this thing around a little bit before they head to St. Louis, because right now it's just not working, and it sure sounds like Seth Lugo's not on the same page as the rest of the organization, and that's not good. And not only, Mac, are you playing bad baseball right now, you have been usurped by the Chicago White Sox. You have been usurped by the Chicago White Sox. They are now 4-2 against you this year. And maybe you were counting on one more year of being able to take care of the Chicago White Sox from a major league club. At this point in time, they are better than you. They have passed you in the standings. They have passed you on the field. And who are you going to beat up on to stockpile wins? Is it going to be the Minnesota Twins? I don't know. They've already played the Twins a couple of times this year. So, you know, you take away those series. It's just really a frustrating time right now for, I think, everybody. I think everybody in the organization is probably frustrated right now. Listening to Vern's postgame callers last night, they're frustrated right now. Looking at the text line from Vern's show, they're frustrated right now. I'm sure you have it up this morning.
Oh.
I'm sure fans are frustrated right now because it feels like,
rightfully so.
No,
it's
fans
the same
have,
stuff.
It's the same song and dance every year.
We're talking about the same thing. Well, we're talking about the same thing in these last 2 months. I mean, again, like lefties, righties, lineup inconsistency. Why isn't Cags and Jensen playing? Salvador Perez, he's in the four hole. Like all of these things we talked about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
8 weeks ago.
Last
year. I mean, we've discussed this now ad nauseum, and at some point something's got to change. You mentioned the records against lefties and righties. I don't know what sample size you need to see. But my God, you're 4-9, and then you're 500, which, again, isn't anything to brag about. But
right.
4-9 to 500 is a massive discrepancy and difference. What's changing? Analytically, I think you've got to find a happy medium here, because I'm not saying analytics are stupid completely, but there is, to your point, there is human.
They are when you don't factor in the other side.
There's
and the other side's stupid when
sports,
you don't
yes.
factor in the numbers, and if there's something there that can push you in the right direction. I'm not a black or white guy. I'm a gray area guy. I get both sides, but you can't be so wedded to one side that you don't consider the other side. And the human being is so vital, and the human brain is so vital in sports to determine whether or not somebody's going to have success. Are they in the right mindset? Analytics doesn't know any of that. They don't know if somebody's having a bad day, and they don't know if somebody's been red hot over the last three or four games, and you want to leave them in the lineup. Those are the things that are missing. Feel is missing from this organization right now. They've got the numbers. They don't have the feel. And you have to have the feel and a combination of both.
It's what makes this so much more difficult. Bob, you and I could do this if it was numbers.
Exactly.
We could figure out the algorithm. We could figure out the Microsoft Excel, whatever the hell, right? Like, I've got brothers in data analytics. I could get them on this. We could figure out the numbers, okay? Then I'd be making millions. I'd say, talk to you later. That's not how this works. You've got to have the feeling, the knowledge. Like, and I know Q, all those guys in that building have forgotten more about baseball than I and you will know combined. But at some point, it doesn't matter. We've got to talk to the players. I don't know. You've got to talk to George Brett. Call somebody. Okay, hey, what's going on?
I talked to George Brett the other day. Had that conversation with him. Kind of turned him around. Unlocked him a little bit. Those are the things that analytics can't figure out.
I feel like that's so desperate for me even saying that. But like at this, it's desperate times call for desperate measures. I mean, at this point. And I think the 620 actually figured it out. So maybe I'll just take a breath here. The 620 says, everything changed once the Hawaiian Bros changed their deal. I think that's funny. We gotta laugh.
Yeah, no, you have to laugh. Do you have a caller to make us laugh?
Oh, yeah, we could do that at 7. How about 7?
Let's do that at 7 o'clock. A caller from last night that is truly going to make you laugh. Coming up, it's over. Stop having the conversation. He's the greatest of all time, and it's not Patrick Mahomes. Next.
You're listening to Bob Fesco.
I'm surprised nobody punched him in the jaw yet.
And Dusty Likens.
He's a hoe, and I want that known.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. Your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, one fan was angry last night with Vern and the Royals. You'll hear what they had to say coming up just after 7 o'clock. It is funny, it is humorous, and you don't want to miss what's coming up here in about 15 minutes
awesome.
On 96.5 The Fan. Maloney texted me about the Boom Boom Room days.
Oh, buddy, he did me too.
Oh, did he? Because all I'm thinking about is back in those days, Maloney and I were down in the Boom Boom Room, and you were still in the Boom Boom Womb. I mean, like...
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Well, that's what I texted Rob. I was like, Rob, I wish I could have freaking partied with you in the Boom Boom Room. Dang. Sounds awesome.
He's still in the Boom Boom Room era of life.
I was going to say, I think he'd still go back there with me.
Hey,
he would do it.
Hey, Rob, what era are you in? I'm in my Boom Boom Room era, and I never left. I wish I never left either. Flex it, baby. Flex it. So, so 15 minutes, we'll hear from that crazy upset caller about what went on last night on
Vern's
show.
Yeah, Vern was hearing it all over the place.
I'd like to give credit to our listeners when I can, and this is one of our guys, Casey Weedologist on X, points out who you wit is who he goes by. And there's a graphic from NFL on CBS, and it says these players have dominated the last decade, Mac, right? And it's most receiving yards over the last 10 seasons in the NFL. Number one on that list, Davante Adams, 11,704 yards. Pretty big number, right?
Huge,
yeah, it's a good number.
Awesome.
1,100 yards a year over the last 10 years.
10 years. It's great.
Tyreek Hill comes in at number two on that list, 11,363 yards.
Pretty impressive.
You ready for the most impressive one?
Yes.
Third on the list, Travis Kelce. 11,265 yards.
Come on, baby.
He is less than 500 yards shy of having the most receiving yards in the last decade, even comparing it to wide receivers. The debate on who the greatest tight end of all time is officially over.
It should have never not been over. But this is a great visual, and for everyone else, this is just a great way to know that he is, because every other, you got Mike Evans, your Hall of Famer, you got Stephon Diggs, one of the best wide receivers. DeAndre Hopkins was the best wide receiver in the league for 2 years in the last decade there. Right. Easily, he's a Hall of Famer, just under 10,000 yards. And you've got Travis Kelce, a tight end. There's not another tight end on this list, all the way down to Cooper Kupp at 10 with a little over 8,000 yards. Mm-hmm. He's got almost 3,000 yards more than Cooper Kupp,
right,
who had a triple crown. He had one of the best wide receiver seasons we've seen this century. So yeah, Travis Kelce, he continues to define what being a amazing tight end is, not only for his prime, but for past it. How do you define, we talk about reinventing yourself.
Yeah.
He's been able to do that before he was really truly himself with Alex Smith, finding his swag and his groove and this new improvisational with Mahomes sort of peak, one of the best duos of all time, and now to after that, to maybe, you know, I'm a step slower. But, man, I know how to get your body weight going in a direction, and then I'm going to flip the other way, that little fake left, fake right, or whatever it may be, using that IQ and that knowledge. Over 11,000 yards is absolutely nuts.
It's nuts, and it's amazing what he could do, you know, now. He could essentially pass Tyreek Hill, obviously, because he's got a busted leg.
Yeah.
And then you've got Davante Adams, you know, where's he playing these days? San Francisco, or L.A.,
with
right?
LA,
still
yeah,
in L.A.
Still
so he still could have an opportunity to put up some numbers.
Yes, exactly.
But Travis Kelce could close that gap. And the fact that we're talking about Travis Kelce leading the NFL in receiving yards over the last decade as a tight end, and only two wide receivers are ahead of him, that is absolutely remarkable. That's why I'm with my man, Casey Weedologist. The fact that Kelce could end up number one on the end of this season as a tight end ends the debate of who the greatest tight end of all time is. There is no reason to have that conversation anymore. There's nobody, in my opinion, that you can even put in that category when it comes to the greatest of all time based on what we're watching with Travis Kelce. And we talk about Mahomes all the time. We talk about Bobby Witt all the time. We're watching another great, one of the greatest of all time in the NFL, and the greatest at his position. I mean, there's a good chance, Mac, that when this thing is all said and done, we've had the greatest head coach, the greatest quarterback, yeah, and the greatest tight end, not throughout the organizational's history, on the field at the same time.
All playing together.
Yes, all on the field at the same time.
It's truthfully unbelievable. I will give another shout-out. Travis Kelce deserves it. He is the GOAT, because it's not just the regular season, by the way.
Right.
You go to the playoffs, he's got the most playoff receiving yards. He's got the most touchdowns amongst tight ends. He's got amongst receivers. He's up there on all those lists with Jerry Rice as far as playoff touchdowns. Like, he is another echelon. He is another tier above those guys. Gronkowski in his peak. Yeah, if you want to take Gronk prime versus Kelce prime, yeah, let's have a conversation about which tight end you want for those 2 or 3 year periods.
Yeah.
But that's the difference. Gronkowski was what, in 4 Super Bowls? He got to play in what, 2 of them? Because he wasn't healthy.
Mm-hmm.
He could not make it a full season. It sucks, but the way he played, the way his body was, he wasn't able to last. And I mean, he's the same age as Travis Kelce.
Today.
Right now.
Right now.
They're the same age.
And he's been retired for a long
time.
4 or 5
seasons, yeah, he's been retired. Kelce's winning Super Bowls, he's breaking playoff records, and he's still being relied on as one of the top weapons on a team that is going to make the playoffs this year and will contend for the division. I'll shout out another guy on this list, because you mentioned it's 10, the last 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Here's the top 10. Justin Jefferson comes in at 9.
Yeah.
8,480. You're like, wait, last 10 seasons? Yeah, Jefferson got in 2020. He's only played 6 seasons, and he's on this list.
And he's on the list,
he's
yeah.
He's on this list. Now, Ja'Marr Chase, one less year. I just want to just define this gap, because we always talk about Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. One less season for Ja'Marr Chase. Justin Jefferson has 1,600 more yards than Ja'Marr Chase in one season more. 1,600 more
and
yards.
And I hate to say this, Ja'Marr Chase has played with much better quarterbacks.
He's had Joe Burrow.
I know Burrow's been injured, but you had Joe Flacco. It wasn't like, and he's going to be on the quarterback, you know, this year, season 3.
And Jake Browning was
Jake Browning was good.
Was really good for that season.
Yep.
Like, they went above 500.
Yep.
So with Jake Browning. So miss me with that. I mean, he came into Kansas City and played a great game.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Browning
was outstanding that day in KC, man.
Yeah, I was at
man.
That game. That
so was I.
Yeah. That was like, what the hell is this? Who's this guy? But no, so, and he played pretty well that whole year. So, and then you got Justin Jefferson. I mean, other than Kirk Cousins, you've got a lot of who's this guy?
Yeah.
What's going on? Nick Mullins, Josh Dobbs,
what
Carson
happened
Wentz?
Last year?
Yes, exactly. So, that is another impressive, like, damn, Justin Jefferson is truthfully going to be an all-timer when it's all said and done. I hope he's got the playoff success to back it up. I hope that happens.
I hope so, too. But nonetheless, Travis Kelce is, I mean, it's just, it's simple. He's the greatest tight end of all time. Yep. And when you see the numbers like that, you truly realize what we're living in. And that's why, again, as we talk about this upcoming season and what we're looking forward to when it comes to the Chiefs, I tell you what I'm looking forward to, watching Travis go out there again. And I think Travis is going to have himself another year. People look at last year, they go, oh, he didn't have such a great year. He had almost 900 yards receiving, right? Wasn't he close to pushing 1,000 and was still the leading receiver?
Yep.
You know?
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So he had a hell of a season last year. It wasn't a perfect season by any stretch of the means, but even in a non-perfect season, Travis Kelce was still out there dominating when he needed to go out there and play ball. And this year, with new coaches at the wide receiver and running back position, Eric Bieniemy back in the fold, an offensive line now that you feel like you can trust, legitimate running backs out there, I think we're going to have an opportunity to see Travis Kelce maybe go out in style and finish this thing with a 1,000-yard season. And that would be something
special. That would be so to have epic. Him go.
He gets 1,000 yards. I mean, my God.
At 36 years old.
At 36 years old,
man.
Just send him to Canton right now.
Yeah, do it. Sign
not
him up.
Not that we have to, you know, not send him to Canton, but it's time to send Travis Kelce to Canton, Ohio. He is the greatest tight end of all time, and that debate now is officially over. Coming up, we'll hear from one of the callers who called in last night to Vern's show, and a legit question from Carrington about the boys in blue. Next!
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Jack Caglione, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty. Weekday morning starting at 6, right here on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5 The Fan.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.